Welcome to Access Advocacy on thepowerofvoices.com. I'm Adrienne Shapiro. The goals of Access Advocacy are to improve the lives of patients and caregivers who are dealing with the chronic illness of sickle cell disease. Today we will be speaking with many of the board members and attendees of the recent HD Care Gala for the benefit of Huntington's disease research. The first person we ran into was official greeter David Saldana. So we're here with David, the official greeter for our HD Care Gala, looking mighty handsome, must I say, in his top hat. So tell us about your role today.
Well, as you said, I'm the official greeter for the HD Care fundraising event, Sounds of Broadway. And, just want to make people feel at home.
Well, we certainly did. We came in twice.
That's right. I was wondering, how did you get out without me seeing you?
Secrets of stem cells, no.
Stem cells are amazing.
So we're certainly looking forward to today, and we've seen you've got tons and tons of volunteers from the university, from your organization. Your board members are here. So what are they in for tonight, for as far as entertainment?
Well, we have the theme is Broadway. And we have a vocalist and a piano accompaniment. And she's going to sing a few songs and, during the course of the event. It's supposed to be fairly casual, kind of a cocktail style. And because we're in the afternoon here at the Center Club, I think she's going to sing a few favorites from Broadway. And then the pianist will play a few, the rest of the time the pianist will play.
Well, being a Broadway buff, I'm certainly looking forward to it. So we'll see you throughout the evening.
Thank you very much.
And now we're speaking with event co-chair and board member, Dr. Sarah Hernandez. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you. So basically, when I was 12 years old, I found out Huntington's runs in my family. I was told that my grandmother died from Huntington's and not much else. And so slowly it started to become apparent who in my mother's generation would get Huntington's. She had five siblings in total, one of which died when they were young. And fortunately for me and my mother, she was not one of the ones that inherited Huntington's. But two of her brothers were. And one of her brothers kind of his whole life said he felt like he was going to get Huntington's. And so he never had kids. He made that self-sacrifice thinking that if he had Huntington's, he didn't want to pass it on. But one of my mother's other brothers who did end up getting Huntington's, he had three daughters, Katie, Kelly, and Carrie. And they remained at risk for a long time. And my Uncle John ended up dying before knowing if any of them inherited Huntington's. But my middle cousin, Kelly, she now has a daughter, Ava, and she decided to get tested because she started seeing symptoms of Huntington's. And so it was an incredibly brave decision that she made, and I think it's one that's essential for people to hear about, because without patients that are willing to make that decision, we wouldn't have patients for clinical trials, and we wouldn't have patients to donate tissue so that we can try to develop a treatment for Huntington's. It's a very cyclical story. Like, my mother's generation was affected by it, and now my generation is affected by it, and now Kelly's daughter Ava has a chance of being affected by it. And so it's a very cyclical story.
Well, it has a little bit of a twist in that it did inspire you, right, to do what you're doing now. And it's very powerful that you've chosen genetics as your research area.
Yeah, so when I was 12, it's kind of the blurb about Huntington's in every high school genetics book. It's one paragraph long, and it certainly doesn't encompass the way every family feels. But because it didn't have that much in it, it really inspired me to want a career in HD research. And so I went to college, and I majored in biology. I minored in chemistry, and I always knew I wanted a career in HD research. It's a lot of school, so it certainly wasn't a decision I took on lightly. So after I graduated from college, I was working as a chemist for a little while, weighing different graduate school options. I got accepted to the Biology and Biotechnology PhD program at Worcester Polytechnic Institute. It's a mouthful. In 2010, and then I ended up graduating in 2015, after which I accepted a postdoc position here at UC Irvine with Dr. Leslie Thompson. And so it's been a long road, but it's certainly been driven by my past, and I always think it's interesting, especially in HD families, to see how people's careers are kind of shaped by this disease.
We were here last year, and we were hopeful, and this year even more so, in that We now have clinical trial that's going on, and we have researchers, young researchers like you. So, you know, I tell people all the time that that we're going to be the last mothers. So we're going to be the last mothers that didn't know really the nitty-gritty, the details, you know, really what the journey was.
I agree. It's going to be really exciting because everything from Iona is so promising. And the biggest part is that they've shown safety. And so at least we know there will be some mechanism that we can use as a treatment for Huntington's finally that's safe for patients.
This is Access Advocacy at the recent HD Care Gala, and I'm now excited to present my conversation with another board member, Karen Thorburn, and her husband, Andy, who is running for Congress in California's 39th District. You've heard much about Karen's work in HD Care, but we're going to have her just quickly refresh you, your minds a little bit on her history with the organization and their goals.
Okay, I've been a member of the board for 3 years. I joined about 3 years ago when I met Francis, who had been in charge of the corporate partners at UCI. When she explained to me what the cause was, I went to a meeting and it was very interesting. And then the next thing I knew, I was on the board. The purpose of the board is to raise funds for the researchers at UCI, and we have had 3 benefits since I've been on the board. Sounds of Swing, Sounds by the Sea, and now this one, Sounds of Broadway. I am also in charge of coordinating the OC Marathon. We have runners every year, and I'm just very proud to say from our company, we have up to 30 runners each year, and we've raised several thousands of dollars for HD Care. We are very fortunate not to have Huntington's disease in our family, but we have been really touched by the need to raise funds to fund the researchers. In fact, one of our causes this fall is to pay to keep Drosophila alive in the lab because they're doing some first stage research on Huntington's disease and the other motion diseases like MS, Lou Gehrig's, etc. So that's what I do.
Yeah, I'm just going to put a plug in here for you hear us constantly talk about the need to support research and phase one funding and there's a pre-stage too. Right. It's very, very difficult for the labs to get funding for those because they haven't really solidified their theories yet. And unless we get them through the pre-stage and that stage one, we can never get really the larger funding sources. So just a shout out for that. Okay, here's Andy.
Well, I should mention that I'm on the board of an insurance company, a global insurance company, not a US-based company. And we're corporate partners of UCI. They have a corporate partner program. And that's really how we met Francis, because she was in charge of the program. And it's through that connection that Francis met Karen and got Karen involved in the charity. So it's actually a relationship that goes back quite a number of years on a personal basis with Francis and I, and then Karen took over. Karen does all the hard work, of course. You know, I just show up when I'm needed. But I should mention, if you don't mind, that part of this is, excuse me, as you can see from the button, I'm actually running for Congress. Yes. And although there's many reasons, I don't want to reduce it to one reason. Certainly one of the reasons is that we're now in an era where the government is cutting research money. They're not supporting these kinds of initiatives. They're not funding the various support programs that they should. And without basic research money, all of these diseases will take a lot longer to cure. So if I am elected, I'm fortunate enough to be elected to Congress, I certainly would be an advocate for more federal spending on basic research.
Wow. Okay. So, you know, and you've heard me go on and on again about the need to have support for research and science and how frightened I am after going to before Congress and participating in many, many meetings with our elected officials at how little they seem to know about stem cell research. So can I say, yay? Yes. And
we certainly have to try to reverse the anti-scientific basis that's been running through certain conservative circles for many years. This administration has just seized on a movement that's been many years in the making. So they don't really even trust science, never mind, you know, basic research. So we have to try to push back and try to get money allocated for not only this research, but all the scientific, climate change, whatever it may be. We have to get refocused on the fact that, you know, science matters, science changes lives.
Well, I certainly am depending on science to change mine, and it has given me something that my mother believed would happen, and passed away without seeing it. And I have that hope and that belief, and I have scientific proof, a reason to have that hope and belief. It's not just I think it, therefore it is, that stem cells are going to deliver for us the cures to not only sickle cell disease, but to many, many, many chronic illness, genetic illness. I mean, just a better life in general for many years to come, as long as we don't lose the momentum. And that also is a real fear of mine, is that that could happen. Not in the sense that not happen, right, but that America will lose it. And that's, as you said, really a concern of ours.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I forgot the number, but recently they published the number of the number of diseases that are basically single genetic diseases. It's in the hundreds. And each one of them is curable if you get enough basic research done. And so even though each of these diseases affects a relatively small percentage of the population, in total, that genetic research that we can do is going to save thousands, tens of thousands of lives. And people always forget that one life who has a Huntington's disease or a serious illness like that affects an entire family. And it's incredibly debilitating and difficult for those families to have a normal, satisfying life because of how these illnesses drain you financially, emotionally, psychologically. So, you know, getting back on track to fund science and believe in science and, you know, push towards solutions is something that the government and the society has to take pretty seriously.
Well, I agree. I think that I always come to them with the discussion on avoidance. So a risk, you hear it in business all the time, risk avoidance and cost avoidance. And I'm always presenting the case when I'm called to testify of what it costs our particular family having a child with sickle cell disease. So the monies that could have been used to grow my business, which would have increased the tax base for the state of California, monies that now we get from the state because she aged out and I'm no longer able to cover her health insurance and her benefits. I mean, really, we're talking this one person is costing, we know, what, probably a good $500,000 a year easily in medical bills with 3-month stays, 6-week stays minimum. And not to mention everybody else in my family. So I'm just talking about me from my business standpoint, not only, I guess, as you said, the emotional drain as well as the financial drain. But there's the emotional, there's how much energy do I have left to then volunteer, right, if I'm so busy keeping my child alive.
And I do brought up an important point, though. The biggest immediate political threat that we face is about health care. Because while we're waiting for these illnesses to be cured, we have to do something to have some type of universal coverage for critical illnesses. You have to cover pre-existing conditions. And after we went through probably a 50-year battle to finally get the beginning of universal care with Obamacare, now we see that being rolled back. Although the repeal failed, we still have to make sure that they do enough to make sure that Obamacare works. It could die of neglect if you don't get in there and have some legal backing for it. You know, there's all kinds of loose ends now that have to be addressed because these things begin with health care. So the research has to really come behind that. And right now, the biggest political battle, I've been all through the district, and the number one issue on people's minds is, can we save Obamacare?
One of the issues that I've not heard addressed as much is for the families that have these chronic diseases, and some of them are, most of the ones we deal with are genetic, but then there are the diabetes, the age-related conditions. They're talking about also cutting Medicare and Social Security. I get Social Security. I don't know if any of our parents could afforded to have the care that they had in their end stages. And it's terrifying to me the number of seniors in our country who are vulnerable. They basically are living paycheck to paycheck, Social Security check to Social Security check. If it's cut, they have a decision to make. Do they eat or do they take their medicine? They have their pills. They eat below what they should be eating. They are not able to maintain a quality of life. So again, it affects the entire family, but many of these people don't have family to fall back on. And then they end up homeless, and then we say we have a homeless problem. Yes, we have a problem, but it's not the homeless themselves. It's the fact that they are not being given what they have earned. We put money into Social Security. How can they take that and cut it? We've earned it. We've earned the money, and we have earned the right to have the services.
Wow, I think this is a whole show in itself. I mean, because these are the things. I mean, we're worried about it on both ends. As older parents of a child that's in her third year at university, we worry about what's going to happen with us, and then what's going to happen to her? I mean, so she would have, I mean, now what is it? She'd be allowed, they're thinking retirement at 67 years of age.
It's already back to 67.
And what's going to be there for her, right? And we don't want to be a burden to her. We want to, you know, carry our own, do our own as our parents did. But as we see them whittling away and not even wanting to give basic health care, and be willing, the odd thing is to spend so much money on end of life. And even in our case, our daughter, the older daughter, is living with sickle cell disease, and if she were dying, they wouldn't think twice of giving her the pain meds she needs. It's a very topsy-turvy society, and it's not at all what we thought it would be.
Well, bear in mind, you know, as Karen's point is, to finish one part of it, for us, if we have any one of these diseases, we are covered by Medicare. So although it's still draining and it's a disease and a family could be affected by it, at least the medical bills will be paid. Of course, if you're not on Medicare, that $500,000, that $1 million, you're going to either go into bankruptcy, you're going to drain your bank account first, and there's a host of these diseases. It's not just one, two, three, four diseases. So the big battle now is to save the safety net we have, which is Social Security and Medicare, but to expand it so that the rest of the country, the rest of the population, has access to affordable medical care. The rest of the world has it. You know, all over the Western world, all the rich countries, as they're called, have some form of universal care. And if you have Huntington's disease, you're much better off being in France or Italy than you are in the United States.
Or even China.
Well, maybe China. I'd have to look into that one. But
well,
certainly Western Europe.
Research
well,
in Huntington's
research,
disease.
Perhaps, they are. Well, but in terms of access to medical care,
well, that's
it's clearly that the rich countries are way ahead of us. They have universal coverage, universal access, and you know, you would be covered. You wouldn't be thrown out and say, oh, you have a pre-existing condition.
Having benefited from that once in Australia, where we all got a virus, we all went to the doctor, we all saw a doctor, we got exams, they did tests, and we got meds, and they apologized when they gave us a $90 bill. So if I could have a, if I could just
did
go,
did you accept the apology?
Oh, I did. But if I could again have wishes, it would be that, you know, we would have that for ourselves or in our countrymen, and we would have people like you and you there helping us. So we're going to end this now. We're going to invite you back for another discussion, but further on this, where we can really, really get into this.
Well, thank you very much for talking to us. It's been our pleasure.
Thank you.
This is Adrian Shapiro on Access Advocacy, and we're speaking with many of the board members and attendees of the recent HD Care Gala for the benefit of Huntington's disease. I'd like to continue now with board member and fellow Americans for Cures Ambassador, Daniel Medina. So we're here at the HD Care Gala, and we have our favorite interviewer from Americans for Cures, Daniel, who is... we called a walking party. Anyway, tell us some of the stuff that you're working on.
Yes, it's always fun to meet up with you guys. You guys are amazing. And last time I met up with Adrian and Casey. It was just fantastic. We had a great time. But I just, it's always coming together at these events. Like right now, we're at the Sounds of Broadway event here in Costa Mesa. And I am so glad that you guys are always, always attend our events and support us. And I just want to talk to you a little bit about an event that's going to be happening next next year, March the 10th, 2018, in the city of Riverside. It's called a HYPE event. It stands for Highly Interactive Participant Education, in which there's going to be a panel of Huntington's disease specialists that will be answering questions from the participants or people, the attendees, in which people get to ask questions in an anonymous fashion, and we won't know who's asking the question. So that gives the participants more of a gives them the opportunity to ask questions that otherwise they might not ask for privacy's sake or embarrassment. So it's gonna happen at the Hyatt in Riverside, and it we will have flyers out pretty soon and information. We'll keep Adrian updated on this event. So hopefully we'll be able to get the word out and get a good amount of people to participate.
Well, that sounds really interesting. I think that when we're at events, people are, many of them are hesitant to ask questions. So I think this opportunity of being able to ask questions anonymously is going to be really super. We may have to borrow that idea.
And it's something that was actually thought of, Health 4-HD came up with it. And Katie Jackson, the president of Health 4-HD, started these type of events. And I've actually been to one of them in Sacramento, and it's fantastic. Just the way, the atmosphere, and the people knowing that they're questions are anonymous, it gives them more of a freedom, and they feel more carefree to ask away and really get more out of the event than otherwise they would if they are pinpointed or they're the person, everyone knows that they're the ones asking the questions.
Well, that's great. And we'll come back with you in March with another show that'll give you more details about this event. So here's my favorite question. Why are you working so hard in the HD world?
I'm working hard in the HD community, HD world, because I see the suffering. I see what the families go through. And especially recently, we had one of our beloved patient advocates whose son passed away. You all know her, Frances Aldana. Her son Michael passed away after battling Huntington's for so many years. And when you see that, it moves your heart. If that doesn't motivate you or stir something in you to help, then I don't know what will. And I just want to share that the only connection I had with Huntington's disease was that my half-brother, he is now 19, but for 5 years he was at risk. He recently tested back in June and tested negative, and people were asking me, so are you still going to help with support groups and events? And I said, yeah, now more than ever. I don't have to worry about my brother getting sick or taking care of him. I could help. I could be like an individual that has no connection and is able to help, knowing that I'm not going to have to be caring for my brother or any other family member. So I just wake up every day thinking about how I could help, how I could make these the HD community's members, how I could make their life more tolerable, because they are going through so much. And sometimes I can't even imagine being in their shoes.
And this is why we call our Americans for Cures families, because we have people like you who aren't suffering on a daily basis with some horrible disease, but understand what we're going through. And I don't know that you had to dig deep, but that you are so committed to helping us and helping others. So I always say thank you, but thank you again.
No, thank you. And I want to thank you guys from the bottom of my heart for what you do, because it's because of you guys that we're part of the Americans for Cures family. But it's done something incredible where we're learning about each other's diseases. But you guys being here and us coming together is just creating a movement in which we're not only becoming passionate about our own diseases, or working to help people in our own diseases, but we're helping each other with each other's struggles. And to me, that means a lot, because just getting together with you guys and talking to you guys over the phone, it just makes my day. It motivates me, because I know you understand. You understand what our families go through, because we are a family.
We'll be right back. I can't say anything after that. Welcome back. I'm Adrienne Shapiro on Access Advocacy via thepowerofvoices.com. And today we're speaking with many of the board members and attendees of the recent HD Care Gala for the benefit of Huntington's disease research. We're back with Daniel Medina, and we're going to talk about something that he made possible for 12 of our sickle cell community members just a month ago. He actually gave us ID bracelets, and the thing about having a medical ID bracelet that looks cool, because these do look cool, is that people are bound to take you more seriously or believe you when you tell them that you have a chronic illness or an illness, a specialized illness, when you don't look sick, which is something we're constantly fighting in the sickle cell community. So tell us a bit about the bracelets, where they came from, and of course I've already hit them up for 60 more. Here's Daniel.
The medical ID bracelets are just something fantastic that will work for any disease community. The way I found them was that I was doing an event in Riverside back in 2015, and I called the Riverside Police Department because I heard they had these awesome bracelets that were for actually Alzheimer's patients. So I wanted to check them out to see if they would work for the Huntington's disease community. And when I found them, I was just so amazed to see that they were so easy to use. And you go online and you set up a profile, and in this profile you put your medical history, your whatever disease you're suffering from, medications, and other issues that are affecting you. If you're ever pulled over by a police officer or any first responder that was trying to figure out what is wrong with you, they would have easy access to your medical history by scanning the little bar on the bracelet, or by calling an 800 number that's on the bracelet, and an operator will bring up your profile and tell the first responder about your medical issues. And the thing that I found is that I wanted to share these with the entire world. So I called my friend from Florida. His name is James Falvano. He's the president and CEO of We Have a Face. And when I told him about it, he called the company, and we developed a partnership. So now we have our own site on their site. We have our own site in which they give us a discount, and now we are able to purchase a whole bunch of these bracelets. And I just want to share them with anybody and everybody that has medical issues and is worried that someone will not know. If they do suffer something adverse, they will have a bracelet that will be able to help first responders or anybody that they come across.
We've mentioned before how hard it is for us to get pain meds, right, when we go in to the ER. But there are also times when, as we've mentioned, people with HD who are Parkinson's or any of those muscular neurological diseases where they don't have control over their function, their muscular functions, that a lot of times people think that they're drinking or they're dope addicts or they're whatever it is that they have, this preconceived idea of what they're physically presenting is. And to have to get past all that first to then get to what your disease is and the treatment you need can lose precious, precious time in the beginning of any kind of situation where you're being diagnosed. So this guy sounds really interesting. He sounds like a real go-getter.
Yes, and like you mentioned, sometimes when it comes to the neurodegenerative diseases that affect the nervous system, the people sometimes have movements, and people will confuse those movements for someone that's drunk or on drugs. So they might have a misconception. And with these medical ID bracelets, it kind of sets the puts everything into perspective and gives someone that, when they see the bracelet, they'll know that there's an issue going on with this person that's not affiliated with any narcotics or alcohol. And James Valvano has just done a fantastic job. He is a go-getter, like you said. He has been to England, Germany, Canada, and has opened and helped create affiliates. We have a face Canada, we have a face England, UK, we have a face Germany. And hopefully next year, him and I are gonna work on we have a face Mexico. And he is just an incredible human being that has so much empathy and such a big heart. And he carries his bracelet around, so do members of his family and anybody else that has with diabetes or any other issues. And to me, it's just amazing what people could do when you work together.
Well, we certainly know that as we're working together on all of these different fronts. There's the stem cell front. Now we have the medical ID. We have sickle cell. We have Huntington's. We have Parkinson's. We are banding together to look at what's happening politically in order to keep support going for not only research, but for people dealing with illnesses having access to health care. And so I just see this as all part of our tribe. So thank you, Daniel. I'm going to let you go back to the party now.
Thank you very much. And one more thing I want to say is that a very important thing, when we come together like this, we share ideas. And that's very important because we help each other when we do that, instead of trying to dig up and find those resources for ourselves. Sometimes people have them available and makes it easier on us and on our journey. So thank you.
This is Access Advocacy, and we're talking with many of the board members and attendees of the HD Care Gala for the benefit of Huntington's disease research. And now it's my pleasure to present my conversation with Dr. Larry Marsh. So we're here with Dr. Larry Marsh, and he's going to tell us a bit about himself and his research.
Wow, where do you want me to start? I'm a professor, a faculty member at UC Irvine, have been there for 37 years. And we mostly take a genetic approach to problems of development and neurodegeneration. And some years ago, in conjunction with Leslie Thompson and a man named John Wasmuth, we got started to looking into Huntington's disease in a fruit fly model. And to make a long story short, you can humanize a fly by sticking a mutated human gene into it, and it gets the same Huntington gene, gets the same similar symptoms to what you see in patients. Late onset, slow progressive neurodegeneration, loss of movement disorder, things like that. And we and other people have made these kind of models and used them to identify genetic factors that can modify the progression of the disease. And I guess one way of looking at that is, if you look at the disease, the useful thing about Huntington's disease is the cause is exactly known. It's not like many of the other diseases where there can be 40 or 50 genes that can contribute to the disease. The gene is known, the causative agent, and you can predict in some way when things neurodegeneration will begin be manifest to an investigator. And if you look at the patient population, persons with a given repeat length have a wide variability in the age at which symptoms start to appear. You can have someone with a certain number of 40, 50 repeats, something like that, where age of onset is as late as 80 or as early as 18. So one thing that sort of suggests is that the secret, if you will, to modifying this disease lies in our own genes and identifying which of those genes can modify the disease progression favorably. And that's basically what we're trying to do in Drosophila, because it's a simpler organism and it contains most of the disease-relevant genes that you find in man, but they're a little more manageable and can be done more quickly. And those studies tend to identify targets which are perhaps more valuable to put your resources in studying going forward with a mammalian model. One example of that was histone deacetylases. We and others identified those as a suitable target for Huntington therapeutics in Drosophila, and then it was shown in mice to be appropriate, and various studies are ongoing in various mammalian systems now to pin that down further.
We get a lot of questions about mice and modeling diseases of humans and mice, but you said an interesting thing, and that was modifying the human gene and then basically putting that into the mouse, right, in order to see what happens. Can you just, for our audience, well, my curiosity, truthfully, when we hear people talk about one of the positive things about stem cell research is they talk a lot about disease modeling. Is this part of the disease modeling model, if there's such a thing, or is this just another way of looking at things?
Well, it's just another way, but a really important way, because at the end of the day, no matter what you find in a fruit fly and perhaps then move into a mouse and find it in a mouse, you need to finally test out that therapeutic option in a real bona fide human cell. And with all the slight variations that are different between a mouse and a man or a fruit fly and a man. And so the stem cells provide the opportunity to get a bona fide and consistent model of a human cell that's responding to a disease state, in this case, Huntington's.
Wow, that has to be the best explanation I've heard of that. So thank you. I think we're going to have to cut that out, and I'm going to have, no, I mean, for me to carry around with me so that I can, when I'm trying to explain these things. So there's been a lot of progress made in your 37 years. What do you think are the top three things to contribute to the progress that's been made in, I think, the marriage of science and healthcare in those 37 years?
In my experience, in the Huntington field in particular, one of the things that's contributed most to the progress is the social nature of the stakeholders that are participating. The Hereditary Disease Foundation, the Huntington's Disease Society of America, an outfit called CHDI and HiQ. All of these are organizations begun by stakeholders to promote research and investigation and as well as caregiving into their particular disease, in this case Huntington's disease. And that's been a much more intimate setting than most other disease supporting groups, in the sense that there's a lot of back and forth between patients and investigators and stakeholders, family members and whatnot. The money of course helps, but it pales compared to the federal dollars that usually go in, but it's important because the funds that are supplied by these types of organizations are usually much more immediate and quick. I mean, it's almost a year cycle from concept to funding if you're going through a federal grant cycle, where it could be weeks or months with one of these organizations. But the other big part is the active participation of the stakeholders in the direction of the research and dropping certain things that don't appear promising and promoting certain things that are appearing promising.
Well, I think that's another thing I'm going to have to carry around with me. Because really, ideally, we are, as a disease community, fighting for our lives and fighting for our children in many, many instances, and want so badly to find something positive out of our struggles. And at this point in time, being given a voice or a seat at the table with researchers and, I mean, my mom struggled just talking to doctors about my brother's sickle cell disease, and they thought it was really odd that she'd ask so many questions. And to think in just my lifetime it's gone from that to actually being a representative or a team member that sits on a phase two medical trial is mind-boggling. But to hear it from your lips as a researcher saying that, you know, we have value and are bringing value. We also think about, really financially for us, it's hard for many people caring for people with chronic illnesses to contribute money for causes. But to hear that, as you said, our dollars, which are definitely not federal dollars, have a major role, I think is very inspiring. So thank you for that.
This connection between the caregivers, the stakeholders, and the researchers really is unique in the HD field of the fields that I've seen. And you see that in when we have these Huntington's walks and various things around the campus. A number of stakeholders often come to visit the lab or just at ad hoc times. And I think, you know, I'm speaking out of turn here, but I think they take away some sense of what's going on and that there's movement. But I will also say that the reciprocal is also immensely important, and that is that the researchers, the folks that are in the lab, you know, going home at 10 o'clock at night, and they go, well, this is a nice experiment I did today, when they see the stakeholders coming by and showing an interest in what they're doing, that's very motivating. And for many people, because you can work for years on a research grant and then file your report at the end of the day and submit your papers and, okay, who cares? But here you really know who cares. The stakeholders care, and there's a great back and forth, I think, between the two groups in this particular disease state.
That makes me so happy. As I've been known to stalk a few researchers. And so tell me, 37 years, and you're going to retire.
I did retire.
You did retire?
Yeah.
I thought you had papers to finish up.
I do. We're still working on them. I sent one off to my colleagues this morning before I came over here, and we have two others that we're working on that, and some other ones that will emerge later, but... yeah, we are continuing a reduced level, but nevertheless, hopefully, the most interesting aspects of some of the projects.
Now, it's been my experience that researchers have minds much like musicians, in that it's very, very hard for them to turn it off. Okay? So I have a feeling that your retirement will include us hearing more from you and more papers in the future, and providing more hope for those of us living with Huntington's and other diseases, and that that brain trust of yours isn't really going to be retired. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Larry Marsh, for joining us today on Access Advocacy. We'll be back in a moment with more from the HD Care Gala on thepowerofvoices.com. This is Access Advocacy. We've been speaking with some of the board members and attendees of the recent HD Care Gala for the benefit of Huntington's disease research. We're here now with Dr. Mitra Hushmand and Britt Lake, two of the newest members in the Americans for Cures family. So first of all, we're going to have them each give us a little bit of their background and what brought them to Americans for Cures. We'll start with Brett.
I actually worked at a stem cell research lab as a lab assistant in high school. I kind of wanted to go into cancer research and stem cell research, but I kind of fell in love with advocacy, and then I studied international studies in college, and then after college, I worked on the Hillary Clinton campaign in Florida and sort of fell in love with organizing and advocacy, so went back to Los Angeles and was looking for something to do, and then talked to a guy who ran the lab at UCLA and asked him if he knows any advocacy, stuff in science or anything like that. And then he turned me on to Americans for Cures. So I met with Mary, then went up to Palo Alto, met up with Bob. And I just fell in love with the organization. And I, you know, really love everything that's going on.
Welcome to the family.
Hello, I'm Mitra, and I did my PhD at a neurobiology / stem cell biology lab at UCI, studying the effect of stem cells after spinal cord injury. So for people who, for instance, are paralyzed, I was looking for ways to help treat their spinal cord injuries. And always been in love with the concept of stem cells and biology. And at some point after my graduation, I knew that research was not necessarily for me, and I was always looking for the opportunity to clinically be able to impact real individuals and have face-to-face contact with them. And so when this opportunity at Americans for Cures came up, I jumped on it because it was exactly what I wanted, being able to actually see the people who are affected by this and be able to advocate for them, educate the public about how much stem cells have done and how much more they can do from here on out. And I've only been a part of the team for about a month now and loving every single second of it. I've met some amazing people like Ron and Adrian already, and Brett, of course, my coworker. But it's just been a phenomenal ride, and I just hope that I can continue to advocate for stem cell research because certainly, in my personal opinion, the future is in stem cells.
For now, for 18 months or so, because we were, I think, one of the first organizations or people actually to be trained for the Ambassadors Program. And so our listeners have gone on kind of this journey with us of getting new ambassadors and doing various trainings up and down the coast. And then for a bit, we were talking a lot about what could be needed or what we could do to help the organization grow so that we could get the word out. And what will you be doing in the next few months to basically give people an opportunity to find out more about Americans for Cures?
I am the digital project director for the Patient Advocate Ambassador Program. So basically my job entails interviewing you guys, like I interviewed Adrian last week. It was a great interview, but really showing like the face of these diseases in the face of stem cell research. Because a lot of times the public doesn't really know what's going on. And the public doesn't, you know, there's not that emotional connection with, you know, people who are on the ground with these diseases, like fighting for advocates that have these diseases. And so my job is to really try to show what's going on the ground through video, audio, talking with advocates, ambassadors, and also scientific researchers to really bring it all together. So that's my role.
So let's do a plug for your Stem Cell Day project that's going to be on blast on social media. So that's for Stem Cell Day, which is October 11th. What we want everybody to do is to look out for it, make sure that you share it with all of your Facebook and Twitter friends. So once again, that'll be Americans for Cures, Stem Cell Day, October the 11th, a social media blast.
So as the director of scientific programs, my job is basically to ensure that the patient ambassadors have all the right tools that they need to educate themselves on stem cells and their biology, what the potential of stem cells are, and how they can help people. So my plan over the next couple months is really to try and put together as much training as possible, either by bringing the ambassadors together or joining them, in fact, with a new program that I'm trying to launch with CIRM interns who are also learning more about stem cells. And hopefully all of this together will help to educate the ambassadors and give them all the tools that they need to be able to go out there and talk to the public more about the potential of stem cells, the science behind them, and talking about it in terms that everybody can understand, because coming from a scientific background, I know that there's a lot of jargon in science, and I'm not necessarily a fan of that when it comes to education, because everybody should be able to understand the concepts. And hopefully I can parlay that to all the ambassadors. And part of what Brett is working on with this Stem Cell Awareness Day plug or set of videos that he's trying to pull together will hopefully help with getting the word out about what stem cells are. And then as people become more and more interested in learning about stem cells, the ambassadors will be there to describe all of that to them.
I just want to direct you all to the AmericansForCures.org. That website, as I've said to you over and over again, has some tools for us that really help us understand the complicated diseases as well as, I guess, the complicated field of stem cell research. So once again, that's AmericansForCures.org. Also, she mentioned CIRM, our good friends at the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine, and they're having two events that I know of. One is for stem cell advocates, and for the first time it's going to be in our area. It's going to be in Los Angeles at Cedars-Sinai there, and then there'll be another one up north at UC Davis. Look at their website, CIRM.gov, and under blog, and you'll see events. You'll be hearing more and more from us through the month of October as we talk about the stem cell events and activities and how you can get involved during our October broadcast.
Sorry, I just had to say one last thing, because I feel that it's important to recognize the importance of people like the two of you, ambassadors who are going out there and doing what I consider to be the hardest work of all, which is actually talking to people about this and putting in your passion behind it. I've spoken to only a few of you over the past month, and I can attest that just hearing your stories from across the table inspires me. And I'm in the field, and I know that the value of stem cells already, but hearing your stories touches my heart, and so I really appreciate the fact that you're continuing to do this, the fact that you have generated a podcast that educates the public about it, and in every possible way, anyone who can take a step to advocate for what I consider to be an incredibly important cause is to be thanked for. So much gratitude for all the hard work that you guys are putting in.
Thank you. I mean, Americans for Cures, that's our family. I want to also say thank you to the over 200 people who, during Sickle Cell Awareness Month, signed up to be on the to receive the Americans for Cures newsletter. We really appreciate your sharing your email space with us, and we look forward to your hearing from us and hearing back from you. So I want to thank everyone for listening in with us today. Once again, it's Axis Advocacy, AXISADVOCAY.org, and you're hearing us on thepowerofvoices.com. Worship.